listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, where we're dedicated to awakening the world to the power and importance of human emotions. Do you believe your own life is meaningful? In your life, do you feel respected, appreciated, and recognized for who you are and all you do? Well, that's what my guest for today, personal development authority Chaney Weiner, is talking with me about. Please post your comments and questions on our blogs, which you can find on emotionalpro.com and on blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. You can also talk with me or Chaney Weiner over our toll-free number, which is 888-498-0570. And remember, you can always sign up for Full Power Living's broadcast through subscription on iTunes. Well, Chaney Weiner is a sought-after authority on human potential and personal development, and he's the founder of the Chaney Institute of Human Potential, which is an organization dedicated to empowering people worldwide in all seven areas of life, which he lists as financial, physical, family, mental, spiritual, and social. And he does this by helping them discover their hidden brilliance and uniqueness based on what's most important to them. His signature Breakthrough to Achieve program reflects more than 23 years of multiple disciplinary study. His work has been featured on Montel Across America with Montel Williams, Hollywood Confidential with Lisa Gibbons, Martha Stewart Living Radio, Hay House Radio, and on hundreds of radio shows throughout the world, including Full Power Living. You can find him on the web at chaneyweiner.com. That's chaneyweiner.com. Chaney Weiner, welcome once again to Full Power Living.
Thanks for having me on. I know it's been a little while, but didn't seem like too long ago, so here we are again.
Yeah, well, you were busy writing, it looks like. Your book is entitled Because This Is Your Life, and in it you say that you're dedicated to fulfilling your own life purpose of helping people live more empowered lives by realizing their magnificence and brilliance through the tremendous amount of value they contribute to the world. In other words, you're saying you're fulfilling your life purpose by helping other people to fill theirs, and that seemed to me a primary message in your book. The importance of helping people to help you. So talk to me about your purpose and about how helping people to live empowered lives is helping people to help you.
Well, that's really at the, let's just say, the core, the center, if you will, of every human being. It may not seem like it on the surface, but every person really wants to help someone in some other way. And that's one of the things that I talk about in the book. And it's interesting because you were bringing up about helping people to help others. And I was actually going to mention this anyway. And really, it's a ripple effect. And, you know, yeah, I know there's people that say, well, if you do good for others, you get back in return, which is also known as karma. I actually somewhat dispute that because really when you take a look at life, and I talk about this all throughout the book, we live in a two-sided world. There's up moments, there's down moments, and they occur equally. There's perceived positive moments, there's perceived negative moments, depends on the moment, on the situation. But in any case, it still all involves helping other people, and people love doing that. They love when people help them, and they feel more appreciated and recognized and respected for who they are and all they do, which is the subtitle of the book.
Right. And so a major thrust in your message is about how people approach their lives. And I loved your discussion about the first time. You point out that the first time we encounter or experience anything, it's very special and on a number of levels. And your point, as I understood it, was to draw people's attention to living their lives every day as if they were having the experiences of that day for the first time. Why is the first time so important?
Well, first of all, that what you just said is exactly correct and how and why I wrote it that way. And it's important because We all know the saying, if you will, that you never get a second chance to make a first impression type of thing. But when you think about that and you think about what you were just bringing up and what I wrote about in the book about the first time moments, I mean, think about it. And this is also why I wrote it. Whenever you have a first time moment, whatever that is, it can go either way. And people see it that way. It can be a quote unquote good first time moment, or it could be a quote unquote bad first time moment. The point in why I wrote it is to see all those moments as having an equal amount of benefits and drawbacks to it. And the reason for that is so if you have a really great first moment, you don't get too up about it. And if you have too much of a down first moment, you won't get too down about it, because either way, it does have effects on your life as you go throughout your life. And that's also why I put it first in the book, and I talk about it more at the end of the book, because it's really, it's part of everyone's, it's part of yours, part of my life's journey, is to see those moments as having, like I said, equal amounts of benefits and drawbacks, but at the same time to say, hey, you know, this moment was a special moment, this other moment may not have been special, but to use those moments as part of your life to live a meaningful life. And that's why I put it in the book.
Well, I don't know, since it has been a while since we talked, my own life work is guided with the notion that our earth is a giant school to which we've all come in order to learn and grow. And I thought throughout your book you were suggesting a similar idea. For example, when you proposed the question about whether your reader would go back to the beginning and live their life over again, whether they would change anything as they relived their life. And you suggest actually not making changes, and I'd like you to explain why you make that suggestion.
It's interesting, because that concept, and I'm glad you brought this up, that whole idea of the going back in time and all that, and I mentioned this in the book about movies like Back to the Future. I believe I mentioned Sliding Doors is another one. I gave those examples on other cool movies, Running Against Time, but these types of time travel movies is really where I came up with the idea in how to write about what I wrote about. And the reason I did is because, again, we as humans, we all do this. At some point in our lives, we say, geez, you know, if I would have done this 5 years ago, my life would have been different if I didn't do this. And again, it goes back to what I wrote about in the book and what I'm about to say here. And what I said a few minutes ago, when you look at your life and you look at all the different moments as having equal amounts of benefits, equal amounts of drawbacks, you see the hidden order, if you will, the hidden blessings in that. And then there's no need to go back and say, God, I wish I would have done this X way or a certain way. And I use the term in the book, connecting the dots in your life. And when you do go back and you look at this the way I'm saying, and you start connecting the dots in your life, you go, wow, you know, I'm glad this happened. I'm glad I did what I did. I'm glad things didn't go a certain way, because if they didn't, or if you were able to go back and change it, you don't know what else could have happened. That's why, did you ever see the movie Sliding Doors?
No, I didn't see that one. I did see Back to the Future.
Yeah, if you get a chance, check out, it's with Gwyneth Paltrow. That's a really cool one, because in that movie, I'm not sure what city, it might be in London, it might be in England, I'm not sure, but she gets fired from her job, and she leaves work early, and she went to catch the subway train while she's walking down the steps to get to the train, and a little girl got in her way, threw her off by about a second or two, which is what allowed her, if you will, to not make the train. The doors slid or closed right on her. And at that point in the movie split into two parallel universes. What happened if she got on the train, and what happens when she missed the train? And it's interesting, because what looked like a quote-unquote undesirable thing, missing the train, had a different ending than if she had gotten on the train. And it was really opposite of what people would have ordinarily thought. And I love that, because when you take a look at your life, that's how it really works. Now, granted, it's not a movie, but your life works in that way. I'm not going to spoil the ending, by the way, but that's the whole idea. Look at your life, look at the events in your life, and say, wow, I'm glad, I'm thankful that happened, and move on from that and be grateful for it.
Yes, definitely. So we're all busy living our lives, and we're dealing with the people in our lives, and we're looking to live our own life purpose. And you suggest as part of this that we look at the people who impact us in our lives. You talk about your stepfather, Carl. When I married at the age of 19, we moved to Seattle to attend college, and I encountered a woman named Norma Wandesford. She helped me in so many ways. She got me into therapy. She taught me how to be a grown-up instead of a girl. And she respected me as a human being, which to that point, really no adult person older than myself had treated me like that. And I was just wondering, are you suggesting when you talk about the people who have impact that we all have our Normas or perhaps even have a lifetime of Normas?
Oh, absolutely. It's just a question of who they are and to what degree or to what extent they have impacted your life. And, you know, it's interesting because this goes back to what you were saying a couple minutes ago about, you know, the world is a school.
Yes.
If you will. And this is another really good example of it and a good part of it because, you know, really when you take a look at it, every single person in your life is that person who's the mentor. It's just a question of who it is. I mean, in your case, it was Norma. It's interesting. I have an aunt named Norma. And in my case, it was my stepfather, Carl, and other people along the way. And again, let's take it back to what I was saying before. When you look at all the different moments in your life, this is another good example of it. When you really look at the people who come into your life, even the ones who you may think are jerks, or there's no way could that person have contributed in some way, when you take a deeper look at it, you go, ah, yes, they have. Even the ones who you might think were not so nice to you, they indirectly were really testing you to see your patience, to see what you're made of, to see what your character is all about, to see how much of a resolve you have, if you're going to give up. So even the people that come into your life who you may not care for, look a little closer and you'll go, wow, you know, that person does contribute to my life. And then you'll have a much more greater appreciation for them and of your life as well.
Yeah, you know, I think before the show I shared with you that my husband Bob died in January. And about 24 hours before he died, I was sitting on the bed next to him, and I had this incredible insight. Now, Bob was a neurosurgeon. He had a very strong intellect. He had strong opinions about how to do things and so forth. And so for a lot of people, including myself, you talk about this, the upside, the downside of people, he was very challenging sometimes, and people would get very frustrated with him, including myself. And all of a sudden, it became totally obvious to me that every second of Bob's life from his earliest years was about teaching and learning, that those negative times that were so frustrating for me and other people were some of his best teaching.
That's a beautiful example. And wow, I mean, that's pretty much the way I would say it. Except in your case, it was Bob. For me, it could be somebody else. But that is a really, that pretty much says it all right there. Now, with that being said, I do want to mention something else. And that is when you come across people are like that. And when I say like that, I like that in a good way because, you know, in his own way. Now, I don't know him. You obviously know him or knew him better than I did. But in his own way, that may have been in his way of showing love, of showing that he cares, and really helping other people become responsible in their lives. Now, of course, you don't want to take it to extremes, but again, you know, the thing is, people get so caught up in the fantasy, if you will, of wanting everyone to just always be nice to them, always support them, always like them and be kind, that they forget about the other side, which also comes into play when people challenge you, when people criticize you. Again, there's a healthy balance. And, you know, it's pretty obvious when you know someone is not doing it in a healthy type of way. And those are the situations that you just leave, if you will. But if it's someone you know really well and you know their nature and who they are, then you'll know. And, I mean, that's a beautiful example. By the way, am I correct in what I was saying about them?
Yeah, Pretty much, yeah. Yes. Yeah. He was much more deliberate, too, than I had. It was hard for me to tell sometimes because his brain, you know, I operate on an emotional level and he operated on an intellectual level. And his brain was so comprehensive that he understood emotions through his brain.
That's interesting.
And he would sometimes go ahead and be taking remedial action about a situation between us when I was still back fretting about the fact that he didn't understand how I felt. Then it would be a surprise to me. Oh, he got it, and he's doing something about it already.
That's interesting. And, you know, there are people who are like that, but that doesn't mean that they're any less than somebody else. It's just their own way. And when someone takes the time to understand that and realize that, they'll pick up on it. In this case, I'm sure he picked up on it. And, you know, that's what makes the relationship go. And some people, it's just not going to jive with them. And that's okay, too.
Right, right. And I like that about your approach, that you're saying, you know, we are two-sided. And I like your conversation about that. The other thing that I resonated with is I talk about life as lived from the inside out. And that means that what you have inside of you, you tend to attract from outside of you. And in your book, when you're talking about loving ourselves, you say, when it comes to loving yourself, it's about valuing who you are, because the degree to which you value who you are is the same degree to which other people will value you. And I want you to talk about that for a minute, because it's my observation that people don't realize the simplicity of this and know how much more empowered they would be if they just focused on dealing with themselves.
Well, that's a perfect way to put it, because it is about providing value. And just understand that when I say value, it doesn't necessarily have to be in the form of money, although most people think of it in terms of that. But this whole idea of loving yourself, which I mean, I'm sure people who are listening to this show know what we mean by that. But most people think it's this, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to kiss myself. I'm cocky. I'm stuck up. I'm conceited, because that's how it was looked at when I was growing up. I gave an example of my friend in the book, and that's not what it's all about at all. It's really more about, like what you were saying and what I wrote about in the book, about valuing who you are, because people, they may not admit it, but people pick up on when somebody is just beating themselves up, and quite often the person themselves isn't even aware that they're doing it, and then they look at the other person and say, well, why is this person treating me that way? Well, they are, because there's this unsilent, or let's just say silent communication going on that's giving out energy, if you will, that the other person's picking up and saying, this person doesn't value that, you know, themselves, so why should I value them? Now, I'm not saying that that's the right thing to do, but it comes down to, that's why I also put, in fact, let me give a quick takeaway here. I put in the book the question of, well, what is it about who you are that brings value to the world? That's an exercise I do every day. I have it on my computer. I just write, well, what is it about who I am that brings value to the world? What is it about who I am that brings value to my relationships, to my career? Ask that question and answer it, because once you do, you get in the habit of realizing, well, what is it about who you are that brings value to others, to other people, to the world? Because again, when you know what it is, people will pick up on it in unseen ways, if you will. You know, I don't know anybody who goes around and has a conversation with someone and says, well, my value to the world is, no, people, that we don't function that way. And I know, you know, some of this might sound like it's foo-foo-ish or any of that, but it's not. Because, first of all, I'm not the kind of person who really gets into that type of thing. I like to look at it from what's really going on in life. And just, you know, just let me say this really quick here. I know we're going to a break in a minute or two. It's one thing to listen to what I say here. I say this all the time. It's one thing to listen to what I say, to what you're saying, to what we're saying. But it's another thing to bring this into your life, into your world, see how it works in different situations you're in, and make it work for you. This is a perfect example of it. Next time you're in conversations or you're around people, think about that. Think about what's being given off on your end, what they're picking up, and think about what we're talking about here with this whole value. That's why I put the exercise in there. Worry about who I am that brings value to the world, because you'll start to resonate with that. People will pick up on it, and you'll be seen differently by other people, and they'll value you for who you are.
Right. And I would just add that the overall mission and overall mission of your work and your book is to create a world full of people who value who they are. Because one way I understood it is that we actually will have a better world and will be more for each other in our time here on the earth when we all value ourselves.
Absolutely, and you know it's a five-letter word, value, but you know, like I said, it goes beyond money. It could include money, but it, you know, typically money is looked at as an exchange of value, but when you're around someone else and you're having a conversation with them and you're having a relationship with them, you know, sometimes the money part of it's not involved. Well, what is it about who you are that brings value to them and to the world?
Great. All right, so we're up to our first break. I want to remind you, as you're listening, to call on our toll-free line, 888-498-0570, and you can talk directly with Chaney about your own issues with being respected, appreciated, and recognized in your life. And we'll be talking about mistakes and forgiveness when we return here on Full Power Living.
How would you parent your child if he or she were a foreign exchange student? As a host for an exchange student, you'd have 5 main jobs to do. Those are the same 5 jobs important in raising kids. People around the world have used this approach to raise kids who are self-directed, make great decisions, and are immune to peer pressure. Get your copy of the Exchange Student Model for Parenting, written by me, Eileen Dillon, now available on Kindle. As a 41-year marriage and family therapist, a single, married, step, adoptive, and grandmother, I've got a thing or two to tell you that's going to lighten your load as a parent and help you create incredible kids who will become amazing adults. Go to Kindle.com and download the Exchange Student Model for Parenting today.
All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. First, visit emotionalpro.com for 2 things. I'd like you to download your copy of my free list of the signals of 7 everyday emotions. They will help you to move toward emotional mastery with the emotions that come up in your life. And while you're there, the second thing is to sign up to be on our mailing list so we can send you our biweekly newsletter telling you about our programs. Next week, Kathy Enoch, who is author of Feminine Rising, will talk with me about the shift we're experiencing here on the earth in the balance between male and female energies. Be here at 9 a.m. Pacific time, noon Eastern time, next Thursday for this discussion with Kathy Enoch. Also, thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through understanding the importance, mastery, and power of human emotions. We've been bringing you our unique in-depth program since 2004. And because emotions are part of everything, we've talked about relationships, business success, parenting, healthy living, solutions to mental health problems, creativity, lucid dreaming, and mastering emotions. So remember that here on Full Power Living, we talk about it all so you can become masterful in working with the emotions that arise in your life. Today I'm talking with Chaney Weiner. He's the author of Because This Is Your Life. So Chaney, one of the things you talk about in your book is your propensity for meeting famous people. I'd like you to tell us some of the famous people you've met, and then how does that connect to each one of us being famous? You say, for example, you're not here to minimize and shrink yourself to others. You're here to stand tall, to stand out, to be an important part of the world. So talk about fame, please.
Yeah, and you know, of all the shows I've been on and talking about the book, you're the first person who's asked me this question.
Ah, good.
And I'm glad you are, because it's an important one. And in fact, in the book, in chapter one, I put in when I met Jesse Owens, which I'm sure most people know who he was. He was the Olympic from the 1936 Olympics. He was the guy who won the 4 gold medals in Germany with Adolf Hitler in attendance. I mean, just Google his name, and if you don't know him, in fact, I think a movie just came out about him in the last year or two. But I put that in the book for a read. Well, first of all, he was the first one that I actually met, and I was about maybe a year and a half or 2 years old, and this was in New York. My mother and father, we went to a car show, and we were walking around, and my father recognized him, and he was, Jesse Owens was working at for Ford Motor Company, he was a spokesman, and, you know, he was very, I have flashes of it, but from all accounts, he was really nice. I was sitting on his lap, he was playing with me, and all that. Now, I put this in the book for a reason, because something happened there that, you know, I'm 2 years old, but something happened that instilled something somewhere in me that when you get around famous people, they're just like other people, and to not look at other people, famous people, as being above you and you being below them. So something happened there that just over time I would just come across people. Just I would be maybe, like here, a really good example, when I lived in Florida, I worked out in a gym. I walk in a gym one day, some guy walks out and says hello to me. Well, it turned out to be Gregory Hines. He was in the movie Cotton Club. He was, you know, a famous dancer. It's just stuff like that. I come across those kind of people. Last year, I went to a Beach Boys, Brian Wilson show. I know someone who's in the band. He brought me to meet Brian Wilson. Brian Wilson's an icon in music, and it's just stuff like that. But the thing is, when you come across these people, to just look at them as you would anybody else, and to see, well, hey, you know, they're famous, but where are you famous in your life? And that's why I put this and the chapter in the book about being famous, because you may not be famous worldwide, but you may be famous in your family, among your children, among your family history, but somewhere it's there. And again, it's the whole idea of not shrinking yourself to other people, thinking they have something you're not, or thinking, you know, they have more than you. The only difference between you and someone like, you know, like Brian Wilson, who's worldwide known, is that he operates on a bigger stage, if you will. And it doesn't mean you have to go out and be famous like that. Like I said, you'd be famous within your family. But look at these people. Look at everyone as just that. You have something that's unique about you. They have something that's unique about them. And those famous people may be looking at you and saying, geez, you know, there's something about him I like, but they're not going to tell you that. But it goes both ways. And that's why I put it in the book. And I could talk about this all day.
Well, I did discover that in my family, I'm famous for the way I say goodbye on the telephone, because I grew up in the Deep South, and I usually go, bye. And pretty soon my family started saying bye back to me.
Yeah, so. See, that's a really good example. Now, within your family, that's great, but, you know, people say, geez, you know, I want to be known by more people. Well, you can do that. It's going to require a person to shift their values, shift what's most important to them, to be able to operate on that kind of world stage. Someone like Michael Jackson, when he was alive, was operating on that stage. I mean, there's plenty of Michael Jacksons in this world who were not as well known as the Michael Jackson, if you know what I mean. I'm kind of using a metaphor here, but it's true. And, you know, there's only going to be a certain percentage of people who are going to be on the world stage like that, but that takes a certain level of commitment. It takes a certain level of dedication. And this stuff's all pretty obvious, but sometimes it's not. And that's why I talk about it, and that's why I'm glad you're asking this and bringing this up, because it's really that important.
Great. Thank you. Well, one of the discussions you have in your book that I found really interesting is about making mistakes, and along with it, forgiveness. Most people suggest that everyone makes mistakes, and then we need to forgive both ourselves and others for making those mistakes, but you have a different take on it. Will you tell us what it is?
Yes, and it's very much in line with some of what we were talking about before. When you go through your life, again, and just let me say, these aren't my opinions. This is how life functions. We live in a two-sided world, and every person's two-sided. I know I keep saying that, but that's how the world functions. when you take a look at a particular situation, there's always two sides for it. There's always there's benefits and drawbacks, and when you really look close, they balance out. Same thing is true of another person. Every person is nice. Every person is mean equally. Every person is happy and sad equally. It's just a matter of taking the time to look and seeing where and when. Now, with that being said, this whole notion of mistakes, when you look at life in that way, you go, wow, this was not a mistake. It was a necessary stepping stone in my life. I give the example in the book when I went out to California. I'm sure you read it. I got involved with the person who had a fitness studio, a little gym. I gave them the person money. It's $30,000. I never got the money back. And I drove out from New Jersey, California, and then I drove back about 8 weeks later. And I talk about this in the book in the chapter about forgiveness, and I didn't forgive him because there's no need to. In fact, this is a great way to lead and talk about this. And I know this is going to sound very much different from what people usually hear, but I didn't forgive him, and I don't teach forgiveness per se, because what I do is, and I did it in that situation, I asked the question, well, what is there to forgive? Well, I was sitting there thinking, geez, I forgive this guy for being a thief, for ripping me off, for taking advantage of me, blah, blah, blah. But when I looked at that and I said, okay, well, what were the benefits of what he did and how did it serve my life? And I listed some of those in the book. And when I did that, it was a whole of the revelation, because here's a guy who took money from me, or I gave him money, and I'm sitting there, I'm moving back to New Jersey, and I'm thinking, should I forgive him or not? And I didn't. And the reason I didn't is because I looked at the benefits. When I saw the benefits on how what happened helped me, there was no need to forgive him. The benefits were, it helped me get out of my comfort zone, helped me stretch myself more than before, helped me become more aware if I was valuing myself and my abilities, which I wasn't. Because I felt that I needed him, I needed to be in a business with him to be able to run a business. As a result, it also helped me it gave me the freedom to go and start my own business, it helped me to become more business savvy. So these were all benefits from that situation. So I had two choices. I could either forgive him, which by doing so, I would have still had an emotional charge on the situation, and I would not have seen both sides of what happened equally. And that's really the key. So when you take a look, when you get in a situation and you say, or you have that urge to forgive someone, look at the benefits of what you want to forgive them for. And when you see an equal amount of those as the drawbacks, the need to forgive is gone. Now, I know some people will say, well, that is a form of forgiveness. We can all spin it how we want. But the bottom line is, call it what you want. Again, look at the both sides of it. And when you see both sides of it equally, you go, wow, and something else comes about from it, and it opens a new door in your life, which is exactly what happened with me.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. Along with that, you talk about certain situations, might be similar situations, coming up over and over again in our lives. Now, in my work with the world as a giant school, my take is that those are things that we need to learn, and as long as we don't learn them, they keep coming up, and the minute we learn them, they stop and we can go on to something else. What's your take on these things that come up over and over again?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to say again, I like the whole idea of how you call it the world school. I know I've heard it said in different ways, but I like the way you put it. And
thank you.
Events are going to come up in people's lives, and until we learn to appreciate those events, how do we appreciate it? By seeing both sides of it equally, benefits, drawbacks equally. Until we learn to appreciate it, it's going to keep coming up in the way that we don't want. And I know I'm giving a general, a general statement on it, but again, look in your life. Look how this works in your life. To those, to you who are listening, to people who are listening, look at the situations that come up, whatever it is for you, and look at both sides of it, you get an appreciation of it, and then as time goes on, look to see if those types of situations patterns keep repeating themselves. Now, they may in different ways, because after all, during your life. Different situations are going to come up, but you'll know, and you'll be able to see how they come up, you know, who's there, that type of thing. But again, it comes down to appreciating, looking at things from both sides. I know I keep saying it, but it's that important, because it can't be said enough times, because that's the world we live in, and it's a matter of shifting your perspective and seeing things from that way. And that's when you get, like I said, a greater appreciation of who you are, other people, and life in general.
Mm-hmm. And when we're really clear about who we are, one of the other areas you talk about, Chaney, is our own investment in who we are and what's important to us, and the importance of not allowing anyone or anything to take us away from our purpose. And this is another one of those inside jobs that get reflected back from outside of us, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, it's the old saying, you know, what goes on inside of us, or what's reflecting inside of us, is what we draw into our lives. Now, to most people, well, not to most people, but to people, that's very abstract. But again, when you remain diligent and you just make what, you know, like what we're talking about here, a part of your life, you make it a habit, you start to see things change. And, you know, sometimes it may happen instantaneously, most times it won't. But again, valuing yourself, seeing things from two sides, appreciating, you start to see signs along the way. And that's really the way that you know that you're on track. If you see little bits of evidence and things coming up along the way, you know a little shift's taking place. Sometimes it's going to be more dramatic than others, but most of the time it's just these little bits and pieces of evidence along the way, and then you'll know you're on track.
So what you're doing in your book is you're offering people all kinds of suggestions, looking in many different places on how to live a meaningful life while also feeling respected, appreciated, and recognized for all that they are and all that they do. And along with that, you talk about the difference between living a motivated life versus an inspired life. And I'd like you to talk with us about that, please.
Yeah, that is very, that's one of those fine line topics, if you will. And really the best, one of the best ways, well, there's two really good ways to look at it. One of them I gave both examples in the book, but the one is, well, what happens every New Year's, you know, the New Year's resolutions, people want to lose weight. Well, what happens? They hire a personal trainer. What happens after, maybe by the end of January, beginning of February? Well, they're back to their old habits again. Well, they were motivated. And it's interesting because I used to personally train people. I come from a fitness background, and I would say easily about 95% of the people were coming to me because they wanted the motivation. Versus if they were inspired, they wouldn't need me, because if they're motivated, they're having to do it, they're supposed to be doing it, they must be doing it. The difference in the languaging when you're saying that, which is the language of motivation, versus when you're inspired. When you're saying, I love doing this, I'm inspired, this is what I've always dreamed of doing, I choose to be doing this, big difference. You're inspired. You'll do things and you'll be more consistent and long-term with it. Now, I know these are words that are thrown out, motivation, inspiration, but there is a difference because, again, you know, just listen to your languaging. Again, bring this into your world, see how it works during your life, and think about the times when you say, I have to be doing X, I have to be doing whatever, Y, I need to, I'm supposed to, I've got to, and ask yourself, are these things that I love doing, or are they things that are just, I'm just doing because someone else said I have to be doing them. And that's motivation. You want to rely on inspiration, things you love doing, things that inspire you, because you won't give up when you're inspired. You have a high probability of giving up when you're motivated. And there is, again, listen to the language, because there's a big difference. I know it's only words, but words have power, and this is a perfect example of that.
And what you're also doing in your book is suggesting that people live their whole lives in an inspired way rather than in a motivated way, that we really shift the way we live our lives. I remember taking a trip to Australia many years ago, and I'm self-employed, so when I go away, nobody's making money on my behalf. At least that's the way it was back then. And I came home, and for 3 weeks in Australia, I'd get up every morning and go, what do I want to do today? And the first day I was home in the States, I got up and said, what do I have to do today? And my stomach went into a knot. And I really got what I was doing, and I had a little talk with myself and, you know, told myself, you don't have to work at all. You're self-employed. You can even have your answering service call people up and shift their appointments. But I eventually decided I wanted to go so that I could pay my bills, and the knot disappeared. So
yeah, you know, that's a great point that you bring up that I didn't mention. And another clue, in your case, you had that stomach, you know, you had a physical sensation. Some people will get that, other people won't. But again, I don't know one person who wakes up in the morning and says, I have to go to work. I need to go to work. I'm supposed to be going to work. No, it's, oh, I got to go to work. Oh, I've got to do this. Oh, I need to be doing that. On the flip side, I don't know anybody that says, I love my career. I'm inspired by my career. No, it's, I love it. I'm inspired. There's a big difference in the energy. Words have energy. Words have power. It's the same thing. If you don't get, like, a physical sensation, look for the words, look for the energy, and you'll know. And when you do, just be honest with yourself and face it and move on from it. And like what you did, you went and did something because you wanted to do it. Same thing here. It's just with you, it was with what you were doing. With someone else, it's with what they want to be doing.
Yes, it really made a big difference. So one of the quotes that I picked up from you is, there's a divine perfection in your life. Nothing is out of order. And you say this when you're talking about breakthroughs and defining moments in our lives. And that, to me, was all about something happens in your life and you never quite see things the same way again. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, the whole defining moment. I gave the story when I went out for the baseball team, and I mean, I'm not going to get into the whole story, but basically what happened was I got cut from the team. I was the last guy to get cut. I thought I was going to make the team. The coach paid a compliment to me. He said, you have more guts than anyone I've ever seen. Come out for the team the next year and you'll probably make it. And I'm thinking, well, geez, you know, how come he didn't make, you know, how come I didn't make it this year? But something happened in that moment. I didn't realize it exactly in that moment, but over time I did. What happened was, in the same moment that he rejected me by cutting me, he accepted me by making that comment. And that's the big takeaway from that, because that happens in every moment in our lives. When you have a moment that comes up that, geez, you know, this didn't go the way I wanted, or somebody said something or did something, well, this, its opposite is going on at the same time. When you realize that, one, you get, you know, that's the divine perfection right there. Two, you won't see things as being mistakes, and three, you just may have a defining moment that comes about from that, that triggers off different events in your life, lead you down the path that you'd love to be going down. And that's exactly what happened with me. In my case, it was with baseball, playing sports. It led to different things. I mean, it really sent me down the path to what I'm doing today. For you, it's going to be something different. The question is, what is that? So that's why we have shows like this, so you can listen to this. And I encourage everybody to listen to the show again. And again, bring it into your life, see how it works for you, and make it work in your life.
Good, good encouragement. All right, we're up to our second break. My guest is Chaney Weiner, who's author of Because This Is Your Life. You're listening to Full Power Living, and we'll be right back.
Know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us. Four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives, as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar.
So, in case you're just joining us, I'm talking today with Chaney Weiner, a sought-after authority on human potential and personal development, who is the author of Because This Is Your Life. He's also the founder of the Chaney, C-H-A-N-E-Y, Institute of Human Potential. So, Chaney, because I'm so interested in emotions, I really like this quote you made around anger. You say the only way that you can be angry about something and someone is if you're expecting a one-sided positive outcome. I assume that means the way you want it in a particular situation, and it didn't occur for you. Will you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, that's one that took me, I don't know how many, probably decade. Well, yeah, probably about 2.5 decades to figure out, because, you know, let's face it, and I talk about it in the book, and it didn't get too explicit. You know, that's why I call it the anger of feeling good, because, you know, I'll speak from my end of it. When things didn't go my way back when I was maybe a teenager, say until my 30s, and things didn't go my way, I got angry about it. Well, why did I get angry about it? Because it didn't go the way I wanted. I wanted a one-sided outcome. I wanted it to go this way, and if anything else came in, no, I got angry. Well, guess what? That's why people get angry. And again, just the same thing I'm going to say over and over again. I could sit here and spend an hour talking about this. I could spend 3 minutes. Bring this into your life. Look at the situations that you're in when you get upset, especially when you get angry about something, and then ask yourself, did the outcome or whatever it is that you're getting angry for, is it over something that didn't go my way or did it go my way? Well, it obviously is something that doesn't go your way, right? So when you look at that situation again from both sides equally, you go, hey, you know, whatever I'm getting angry over, you know, what are the benefits of whatever it is that's making me angry? A great example of this, I know I'm from New Jersey, is there's a lot of traffic on the road in New Jersey. I mean, there's other traffic in other cities in the United States, but particularly there, people are on the road, they're driving like maniacs, they get angry, some of them try to run you off the road. Why? Because their fantasy is that, well, you didn't do what they want you to do on the road, so they got angry. Well, if you happen to be that person, and I know, you know, many people are sitting in rush hour traffic and you get angry over it, well, what are the benefits of being in rush hour traffic? Well, it gives you time to contemplate your thoughts. It gives you time to maybe relax. You know, even if you get to work later, you don't have to deal with a boss you don't like. You know, just different benefits of it. And then when you do that, you go, wow, you know, there are benefits to sitting in traffic, and as a result, you won't get angry. So the fantasy there is, well, you know, the road's got to be clear. Well, everything's got to go my way. But when you look at the other side, you don't get angry anymore. And that was a real big lesson for me. I know I'm using, you know, a traffic example here, but look at the different things in your life and you'll see the same thing. And it's one that took me a while to get over. I mean, every now and then that urge comes up, but now I know how to take the step back and do what I just said. And it works very well, and it'll work very well for you too when you bring it in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's very similar to what I have, how I work with anger also, or understand what causes it. So let's talk about transformation, because you say if you want to transform any area of your life right now and become a master of your destiny, it's never too late. Just remember that in order to do so, appreciate and be thankful for who you are, the decisions you make, the people you come across in your life, and all the experiences in your life that have been put before you. You actually seem to be asking people to be fully alive in their lives. Keep going until going stops, and love life as it happens. Did I get it?
Yeah. And, you know, like we were saying before, there are no mistakes. There's no need to forgive yourself. Just look at the blessings in your life. Where people get hung up and this is worth mentioning, is, again, far too many people are looking for that one-sided outcome. Now, of course, I'm not saying to go around and look for sad moments, mean people, cruel situations. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is to understand that during your life, this is the world we live in. And most people are so addicted, if you will, to the one-sided, quote-unquote, positive outcome, they don't take the time to look at the other side and how that serves. And when you do that, you realize there's no mistakes in your life. You realize that the people you come across in your life, whether they were mentors and people who you really looked up to, or they were people who you just didn't like, well, they served a purpose in your life as well. And again, this is not some foo-foo, hairy-fairy type of thing. Look at these things. Bring it into your life. Look at these situations that come up and take the time, because it may seem tedious at first, but the amount of time that, in fact, it's not even tedious, because when you do this on a regular basis, you just make it a part of your life and you dance your way through life instead of limping your way through life. And that really is the difference between living the life you'd love to live versus living according to the way someone else wants you to live.
Definitely. So, you know, we're coming up close to the end, and there's one other thing I want to get in, and that is this statement that you make, that there is no such thing as a committed relationship.
Yeah, because, Glenn, you're the first person to bring this up. That's two firsts.
I make my own questions.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I typically, I'm giving some of my secrets away here. Usually I give our show questions out to people. You, I didn't, and I would very much prefer doing it this way because it's more natural, and I just like the different questions that come up, and this is one of them. The whole idea, I'm not going to get into the whole story in the book, but it was about my former wife, and this is really where I got the revelation. And that is, you're not in a committed relationship with someone else, because every person is committed to what's most important to them or their values. People are committed to what's most important to them. And when, let's just look at it from a relationship, any relationship perspective, when person A takes the time to care enough about what's important to person B, and person A realizes what's most important to them, and they communicate what's important to them in terms of what's important to the other person, that's when you get the type of relationships you want. That's what really keeps the ring on the finger in marriages. Because, again, people will say, well, I'm committed to the other person. No, they're not. They're committed to what's most important to them. I gave the example of someone who's in my Breakthrough to Achieve program, and she was from New Jersey, and I had to go through the exercise of just asking what's most important to her, most important to the guy that she was having a little bit of a conflict with, and how what was most important to her served him and vice versa. She came up with 250 ways, and it went from being a relationship that broke off to him showing up at her doorstep and proposing to her, because she took the time to see what was most important to him, but didn't do it at the exclusion of who she was. So, again, you're committed to what's most important to you, but not at the expense of someone else and just disrespecting other people and saying, well, if this is important to me, the heck with you. No, it doesn't work that way. And I'm sure, you know, you were married. I'm sure, you know that. I know that. And that's what keeps the ring on the finger. And many times we're not consciously aware of it, but this is what's going on in silent ways, if you will. And it's the driving force behind every relationship and friendship.
Yes. I like that. But you have some unique ways of saying things, just like you say we all do. Okay, so the final point I want to make is taking a quote from you again. You say, it takes a person of character with a strong will to say, now is the time for me to step up and declare that I do matter, that I do make a difference, that I was put on the earth for a reason, and that I can contribute to the world so others can do the same. And this comes from your discussion on trusting your gut and believing in your inner God, and speaks to your an overall point in your book, which is that every one of us matters, that every one of us can make a difference, that we all are here for a reason, and we need to give the world our contribution. What more do you have to say on this?
Yeah, that's I wrote it, so that's right on. But it is the way the world works, and I'll just make this real quick. But the thing is, people get so hung up on what others think about them. Here's a major takeaway, and if you didn't get anything else out of the show, get this. No matter what you do in your life, you're going to have people support you and challenge you, praise you and criticize you. They're going to be nice to you and mean to you. They're going to be kind and cruel to you. You may as well be who you are. You may as well stand up for what's most important to you while, of course, respecting other people and appreciating them. But just know that you're going, no matter what you do, you're going to get crap from people, and you're going to get people who are going to be on the other side of that, who are going to be the ones that are going to support you the most. So you might as well be who you are, and that's really how you stand up for who you are. And the people who are going to give you more of the crap, you wish them well, you shed that branch in your life, and move on. They may come back into your life, they may not, but the bottom line is you stand up for who you are, because that's why you're here. And it's not what other people think you should be doing or what you have to be doing. It's what's most important to you. And knowing that, hey, you know, there's just going to be some people who aren't going to like it, and that's okay. Wish them well, move on, and you'll draw other people into your life who will.
Amen. So, Chaney, your book shows you, in my reading of it, to be a gentle, caring person who wants the best for yourself and everyone around you. And I really appreciate you for that. And those of you who are listening, I want to remind you that the title of Chaney's book is Because This Is Your Life, and there's a lot more on it too, but I'm not going to read every single word. And his website is chaneywiner.com, chaneywiner.com. Chaney, thanks so much for being on Full Power Living today and for sharing your thoughts and ideas with us.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for having the show, because it's just not about me. It's about other people come on, they have their viewpoints, so I appreciate you doing that as well.
Great, thank you. All right, well, join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, that's noon Eastern time, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Next Thursday, I'll be talking with Kathy Enoch about feminine rising. Changes, as we've been discussing, are happening in our lives, and Kathy wants to help us understand and work with the energy changes that are currently happening. So invite your own friends and family and be here next Thursday. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media is our producer. Thank you, producer Paul. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.